Hello, everyone. This is Greg, your host of Goddamn GameCube, and this is Season 4. Follow Goddamn GameCube on social for updates on the show, and subscribe to us on YouTube for bonus video content. Thank you, and enjoy today's episode. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. Greg and Riley are your hosts today, and we are going to be talking about Titanfall 2. Another game that I didn't know if we'd ever discuss, but it definitely deserves some attention.
Mm-hmm.
So, Riley, I am going to kick it to you right away, and let's get going.
Yes, Greg, thank you for addressing this with me. I was revisiting some of our older episodes recently, and we do positively speak about this. I'm very grateful we get to speak about it at length. It's kind of funny because Titanfall 2, we are not doing a Titanfall 1 episode. I just want to very briefly, I have a quick rundown of Titanfall 1 because I haven't played it. You didn't play it, right? Did you play the first one at all?
I played a few hours of it when it came out.
Okay, so basically what I have here, Titanfall 1 is an FPS released in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
The debut release by the former Call of Duty team. They were the ones who worked on the first couple games, Modern Warfare, that kind of stuff.
The Infinity Ward guys.
Yes.
Yep.
So they were, I didn't know this, but they were actually fired for breach of contract, some kind of legalese thing, insubordination, whatever. It's all on the record. Series of lawsuits and staff walkouts. They seem like they're in the right to me personally. I'm always siding with the underdog, but this led to the foundation of Respawn Entertainment as we know it now. So they developed it. It was published by EA somehow. And so basically this is a, for all intents and purposes, a mech game. You have a bunch of kind of different looking mechs. Designs that were I found it was kind of interesting. They very rudimentarily put together with models made of wire and wood and plastic. They had a lack of computer resources, so they didn't like 3D it out. They just kind of fussed with it. I think one thing I wanted to bring up that I think is a lost art in game is that this game was populated with multiple computer controlled characters. To not only improve the fluidity of gameplay, keep it consistent, keep it moving, but to also create a grander sense of scale. And this is something that I really liked about the early Star Wars Battlefront games, the Pandemic Studios. Like, there was always like a shitload of people on the map to feel like you were in a large battle.
And are you referring to single player or multiplayer?
That's the twist here.
Yeah.
A little bit of both. So for all intents and purposes, this game is basically multiplayer only, the first one. There is a sort of single player that is more or less a tutorial. It's just kind of like a faux game type. Like, did you play that at all? Is that what you played?
So I didn't play that. The little connection I was gonna make, I have only played one other multiplayer game where the multiplayer map is purposely populated by computer characters.
Okay.
And oddly enough, it was the Turok game on Xbox 360.
I like that game a lot.
Yeah, game did that too.
That was not to get too far off the rails, but I played that on a whim and I think everyone hated it. But I had a good time.
Me too. Anyway, that's the only connection I have to something like that.
Yeah, so these were scripted multiplayer engagements that they had like a little bit of backstory on and stuff, but it was overall just like a tutorial for the multiplayer. It got very negative reviews. Basically what I wanted to get down to here was this is sort of where you get the cat and mouse dynamic here with the pilots and the Titans. So your pilots are your normal sort of Call of Duty guys running around doing all this kind of stuff, and the Titans are their partners, you know, the huge mechs, and they sort of exist in tandem. You know, if you're on the ground, you are threatened by the larger one, but you can do a lot more. You're a lot more agile, do some parkour tricks, that kind of thing. So interestingly enough, this first game used a lot of cloud computing. Do you know much about this?
No.
So it's like a lot of the work is being done by the cloud when it comes to for the servers, the physics, and the AI. which is very like.
So it's like it's happening in real time. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, from what I understand, I don't want to like punch above my pay grade here. Okay. But I thought that was kind of interesting to bring up that this was a adoptee of this where. You know, I guess to lessen the load on consoles or your system or whatever. But yeah, so this game was very, to me, it just kind of came and went because I was into that game Hawken at the time.
Yeah.
Different, like kind of a little bit more rugged, it seemed. And it was just kind of like, whatever. But so this game, it introduced the central conflict here is the two factions. You have the Frontier Militia, that's your guys. And the IMC, which are an industrial conglomerate, kind of like the East India Trading Company, mm-hmm. but like in space, I guess. So it's very sci-fi, sort of futuristic. Ultimately, it seems like a good blueprint for what we have in Titanfall 2. But I did want to mention, I don't know if you know about this, it was very vulnerable to hacks. I guess this was like their first project, a lot of cheaters. And eventually, you know, people started filtering out a low player count. They actually started ending sales of the original one. They started taking it off platforms just because they couldn't afford to maintain, you know, keeping the cheaters out, which is kind of a sad fate for any game. But that's the story of Titanfall 1. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get into the second one, which notably, I thought it was very interesting. It was like they were determined to have a single player, which is the majority of what we're going to be talking about today. It's so weird that this game that just sort of came and went has a sequel that has so many interesting things about it, like very unique things that I haven't seen done in other games. And it's very odd to me. So this one came out in 2016, received critical acclaim, but it was a commercial disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
There was a distinct lack of marketing. I remember finding out like months later, the second one came out, you know, I was like, so, and this was released during a very crowded, FPS release window. So you had Battlefield 1 at the time, which was enormous.
Yep.
And you also had, Infinite Warfare,
yep.
which was the space Call of Duty. So, Not ideal. It didn't do very well commercially, but hopefully trying to spread the word here just so you can maybe appreciate this underrated classic. So essentially, the basic premise here is you have a very generic seeming kind of protagonist, Jack Cooper, and through a tragic turn of events, he inherits like the most advanced Titan mech in the Frontier's arsenal. And he finds himself tasked with becoming because he's just like an ordinary man, becoming a pilot and completing his former captain's mission. So this is pretty much an instant win for character motivation if you can handle it well, I think, mm-hmm. where you have like a Solaire sort of, or not Solaire, Oscar, where you have like, you know, I'm going to help you. I'm going to
hand the torch.
I'm going to give you this amazing thing and I need you to fulfill my mission. Right.
Sure.
And the way they describe it in interviews is it's the two characters kind of playing off each other, kind of like a buddy cop movie, like, you know, like just partners in crime.
I think like this game was kind of a hard sell for me at first.
Yeah.
You know, as like you and I know, like mech games are not my thing either. You know
what right.
I mean? I tend to have a hard time with big, bulky, awesome robot destruction. You
right.
know what I mean? I'm not into it.
Yeah.
And I think what was interesting, also tricky about this is how do you have normal person, big mech, but have it be emotionally compelling?
Yes.
Which it is, and it is not. And they really do a nice job toying the line between cute and serious
completely.
Throughout the entirety.
Yeah, absolutely. So in that vein, I wanted to get a little bit into the memorable aesthetics of this,
mm-hmm.
Where I found that the pilot attire and weapons, like they're pretty interchangeable, like mm-hmm. like seeming that's kind of where I was coming from. Like, I don't know if I'm into this, you know,
that was kind the of, Call of Duty part.
Yes, yeah. exactly. And I'm like, it kind of looks like they're contemporaries. But I felt that this was very it makes a nice contrast with how exciting and memorable all the Titan stuff looks.
Mm-hmm.
They all look very, you know, kind of unique and memorable. BT is the main Titan that you're hanging out with. very memorable character design with the roving eye mm-hmm. thing, and he does the thumbs up. You have a little thumbs up with him. So basically for me, what I liked so much about this, and this is what we were talking about with our Metal Gear thing, with I don't like anything that is too mechs that are too like Power Rangers-y,
yeah,
where it's like super, you know, alive and fluid and everything. I like the big chunky pieces of machinery.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And the majority of them, I would say almost all of them in this game, feel like that, like a believable piece of equipment. And a small detail I noticed upon revisiting this is that when you climb into BT's cockpit, the HUD is comprised of like presumably four or five different fiber optic cameras, and they all kind of pivot to into position. Like, it's not okay. just one screen. It's like mm-hmm. a couple different cameras. It's kind of
like
cool.
You're seeing through the eye.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. 100%. And one of the interesting things also was the ship design in this, because there's a good amount of spaceships and all that stuff. They're trying to convey that these were not warships, you know, because this is sort of the frontier, mm-hmm. and all these are being sort of the Titans too, kind of being retrofitted from an agricultural or industrial role into war. And I thought that was a cool way to do it. I found Cooper's voice acting kind of inoffensive. You know, he's not,
yep.
he's like vanilla normal, but he's not like, didn't grate on me, you know? And I would call BT's performance like the key to success here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like what I said before, where I think it's specifically BT that you really stride that line between cute and serious.
Yes.
Where you're trying to... It's very serendipitous. I happened very recently, I was reading a bunch of the Google Sentient AI documents.
Yes.
And kind of reading how like a quote unquote robot would talk to a human.
Right.
So going back and revisiting Titanfall, I almost feel like I'm now... looking more closely into how would you voice act script a AI essentially, right?
So, and I should be clear that like he is, I believe, the only one that has an AI attached to him.
I think so.
Only one of his own personality. So the voice actor, I want to give credit here, Glenn Steinbaum, very understated performance, very much the key to its emotional success. I feel like in the wrong hands, it could have been, or mouths, we'll say, it could have been kind of like trite or cringy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am discovering emotions, you
right,
know,
right,
like,
right,
come
right.
on. But it's very like, yeah, go ahead.
So like, there are actually like two lines that I picked out that I thought were very funny.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know if you, perhaps I can go for it now.
Yeah, go ahead.
So something that I thought was really funny was... there's at one point Cooper says something, I think I'm going to need some new underwear. And then BT says, noted for the next supply drop.
Yeah.
Right. We're like, you have that disconnect. Where he wouldn't understand joking.
Yes. And it's not like, it's not too robotic. It just sounds like a guy saying, all right, cool.
And there's another really funny one too, where, there's this little running joke in the game where Cooper says something, you're going to have to throw me.
Yes.
And then the robot, or I shouldn't say the robot.
The robot.
Yeah, BT ends up like almost like internalizing throwing as like a method to completing a mission.
Yes.
So they're actually, we'll talk about the end of the game later, but
yeah.
There are some moments towards the end where he's like, BT will actually say, we have to engage the throw, and it's almost like it started as a cute joke, but now that endearing line about having to throw him, almost like Gimli,
yeah,
like you should throw
yes.
me. It almost becomes like this very like heroic moment too.
Well, so they work on it over the course of the game. It's kind of funny because it's you know you do need him to throw you,
yeah,
but it is sometimes it doesn't work out like
in
the beginning
yeah.
and then as over the course of the game it kind of becomes like a trust fall thing like so
mm-hmm.
it works for me. Before we get too far away from this, I wanted to mention that the sound design is incredible.
Yeah.
Very impressive, you know, just in terms of so much shit is going on. There's so many enemies on screen. You know, you can have a couple Titans on screen at once, all their different weapons and stuff. And the way it was all mixed, it really lent itself well to me for that sense of scale they were going for.
Well, I feel like you have the right team to do that kind of thing, where we can like make fun of Call of Duty and Battlefield forever, but like these war games sound amazing.
I see. The thing is, I want to differentiate here. This is the team that made all the ones they made I liked.
Yeah.
Like the first two Call of Duties.
Call of Duty 4.
And the first two Modern Warfares, yeah. I believe they did.
Yeah, sure.
And those, I think those are all good.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes perfect sense that they would do it.
They would cross that over.
Yeah. So I guess just wanted to ask you very quickly before we move on. So what did you think of the way this game looked and sounded? And did you feel that they adequately conveyed the scale and power of Titan combat?
Yeah, so I was thinking of something. I was actually, something struck me earlier today. Do you remember there was a game that came out in like 2007 that I hated called Lost Planet. Do you remember that?
I was actually thinking about that because I was confusing it with Dead Space.
Yeah. So the reason why I bring up Lost Planet is, sure, it's not the same kind of game, but what I think about Titanfall is it's kind of like Call of Duty, Mirror's Edge, and Lost Planet put together.
Right.
Where you have the running across wall animations from Mirror's Edge. It shoots like Call of Duty, but you also have this very active mech system.
Yes.
And so what I thought of this game, like, aesthetically, it's almost like you had the perfect team for this, right? Where it's all, you take the Call of Duty very sleek shooting. I'm going to make a half joke here. They kind of made what Infinite Warfare should have been, right? Which is mechs and space and AI and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, I think aesthetically a complete success. So we're going to get into the overall gameplay here. Interestingly enough, co-op was considered but scrapped because they wanted to emphasize an immersive storytelling experience. I think it was probably for the best. A much more reductive approach was taken, where they kept kind of, it was like that Japanese garden thing where you take away all the unnecessary elements and focus on the fundamentals, kind of helping players get a handle on the game a little quicker so they can, you know, kind of just jump into if they want to. Focus mainly on honing like your primary skills. It's really not that complicated. Like, despite controlling two different types of, you know, it's
shooting mechanics,
a little bit more involved in like a Call of Duty, I think it's very easy to pick up.
Yeah.
An interesting philosophy I found out about here, where they talked about they have a 2-1-1 ratio for the content here. Two parts combat, one part platforming, and one part puzzling.
Yeah.
And I think that's a winning formula right
there.
Well,
I think that's really kind of where the Mirror's Edge thing comes into play, right? There's a lot of running across walls and jumping. And
yeah, so the pilots, they can wall run, they can double jump, and they can slide. It's very dynamic.
There was a level in particular that I thought they kind of put this on display. Do you remember the Urban Assembly?
Yes.
Where you kind of have to almost go through the different prefab environments. It's kind of weird, like a movie set, and you have to kind of jump.
That was very Mirror's Edge.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, like I mentioned, kind of the FPS equipment was pretty stock, but there are a couple notable exceptions I wanted to mention, because you fight a lot of robots in this game, which I forgot about, and they have the arc grenades which shock them, and they also have the ninja stars with the it creates like little gravity wells and fire, sets people on fire and stuff, and also the ticks, which are the little crawling mines.
Yeah, that's
very, very, very cute, very kind of, oh, this universe has something
going on,
memorable elements, right? So basically the way they set this up in the campaign, versus, multiplayer, BT is a unique Titan because he can pick up, other kits and copy any of their move sets in the developer's words, like Mega Man. Over the course of the game, I'm just going to rhyme them off super quick just for the audience's benefit here. You have the Expedition, which is the machine gun. And you also have that shield that you can
block. Vortex shield.
That's I love that in any game.
Yep.
The Tone, which is like the target locking. I thought that was really cool because you have to land 3 hits with your rifle, and then you can, once that's like a target lock, and then you can shoot your missiles at them. A little different than just kind of pumping somebody full of lead, sure. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Scorch, which is the thermite flamethrower, yep. Stuff like that. The Brute, which is the flying heavy one. You shoot a bunch of rockets at people. The Ion, which is the laser. It's very, very powerful. The Ronin is the... I like this one a lot, the sword one, where you can, like, shift through reality and...
Yep.
You block
almost
with
like
the sword.
The Ronin, they're kind of talking about, like, feudal Japan or, like, the...
Yes. The North Star, which is the sniper. That's a good one. And Legion, which is very, very slow, but it deals very high damage with, like, a huge turret. So you've got like a pretty much cornering every aspect of like a shooter, but blowing it up to an enormous scale. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. So there was also I don't know if you use this much, but a stealth kind of cloaking mechanic you could use, mainly intended as a way to get the edge on an enemy or a group or make a quick getaway when things get hairy. For me, this is a pretty good way of implementing some sneaking without sacrificing that momentum, like keep you in the game. Like it's just a very temporary, like the Arbiter in Halo, I guess. Like it's an emergency thing, you know, like just get me out of there. It does it like because this game is by and large kind of like a fuck it, let's go kind of experience.
There's not
a lot of like sneaking intended.
No,
it's a good way to just kind of sneak it in there. You do have a handful of dialogue choices, which are kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's right.
And you're really going to get to the same point. Like you're going to get to the same ending, but it just kind of it allows you a little bit to color your relationship a little bit more with BT, because you can kind of take a more sincere approach, or you can kind of like joke around with them a little bit more, which is nice. And one other thing I wanted, because I didn't play much of the multiplayer. It is very awesome. But they, unlike many of their peers, decided to give away maps and modes for free so the player base wasn't fractured.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, that's so honorable. That's awesome.
Well, I almost feel like, I don't want to say it was necessity, but they didn't have a big player base from the first one either.
Right.
So I think really what they were trying to do is they're trying to bolster their player base, but I haven't heard anything about a third one. So I'm not sure why they are doing that other than...
This was years ago.
This is 2016, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
So I mean, it's just odd for me. I'm just so jaded now. It's odd for me to think a developer would just be a good guy and give you stuff for free. It just feels weird.
Absolutely. So basically, I just wanted to ask, with all those sort of balls in the air, do you have any particularly fond memories of gameplay? Any loadouts you liked in particular?
Yeah.
Moves? Guns, etc.
I think Vortex Shield throwing, because that allows you to essentially throw bullets and rockets back at people, is always the best. What I found myself using a lot is pounding the Gatling gun and kind of almost deking and dodging my way, you know, between environments and sort of pounding damage that way. Like, I didn't use the flamethrower too much. I don't know what you chose to do, but I did a lot of Vortex Shield and Gatling.
I was pretty fond of... Just because it changed the gameplay loop, the tone. It was funny, I just saw the new Top Gun and they talk about that. I've got tone. It's like you gotta have like
I just saw that too, actually.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's like a warm blanket, kinda like this game.
Exactly. Totally similar, but in terms of rewarding like good aim I appreciate the options, I guess is what I'm saying. So I liked that one a lot, and I liked the Ronin sword shotgun close quarters kind of thing. That was a lot of fun. So you want to get into the story here?
Yeah,
the main
let's
campaign.
Do it. Yeah.
So what I wanted to basically preface the audience with is that this game in particular, they clearly strove very hard to make each board very memorable. There's only eight boards, right? And each of them has, like, it serves a purpose. It's not just, like, filler.
And that's Riley's slang term for missions or levels, is boards.
Yes, sorry. that was a very, very dated kind of terminology there. What I found very surprising was that their community was evidently clamoring for single player. It's kind of a piss or get off the pot kind of situation.
Well, I think we kind of have to go back into history a little bit.
Yeah,
where a multiplayer only game like Titanfall 1 coming out in 2014, kind of a sin, back then. I feel like that was the start of Rainbow Six is going to come out as multiplayer only. Then Fortnite's going to come out as multiplayer only. You know what I mean? We were just kind of starting that.
Overwatch. Yeah, like the single player was very much just cursory for Titanfall 1. And it's so I guess people were kind of like, give me a little more game.
Well, sure. And I think number two was a big reason I think why we're even covering this is because of how surprisingly good the single player is.
Yes, absolutely. So for this, they strove to create an experience that showcased Titanfall's unique mechanics. Mm-hmm. I think they did that excellently. The areas were designed to be closer in tone and aesthetic to a Zelda level than a traditional shooter. That was where they were coming from, which I think is kind of interesting. How out there can we go and how beautiful can we make it? You have a very kind of, in the beginning, you have a very addicting kind of training course, like your classic Captain Price.
Yeah.
Kind of
flashbang through the door kind of thing.
Exactly. And I think it is it's really funny because it's basically just teaching you. You don't really need to, like, you kind of just get that itch. You see your name on the leaderboard. I'm like, I could do that.
Yeah.
So I like that a lot. It was a good start. And they are about to give you the Titan training. It's about to, like, drop in front of you, and your ship gets attacked. So the training simulation ends. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty cool. It's like, oh, you're not ready for that yet, you know? And you get dropped into this battlefield where it immediately sort of impresses the necessity of the Titans on the battlefield, because you're just like, you get dropped into the shit, you know. Yep. Like just like huge, a large scale battle. The enemy Titans show up, they wipe you out, you know, it's crazy. And your captain is killed.
Mm-hmm.
And his Titan, who we know as BT, gets really wrecked by this. So you and your comrades are kind of rounded up by the Apex Predators.
Mm-hmm.
Which are this group of, you know, enemy Titan pilots that they're like mercenaries, and you kind of, they become like the Metal Gear boss unit over the course of the game. You have to fight them one by one. And the situation in the beginning, it's so funny because it's like, I was like, man, like it takes a lot to get me sucked into a story, but it is very hopeless in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like you have like an entire army that just gets like wiped, and you are survived just like by a fluke, essentially. So you have this first mission in like a jungle-y kind of setting, like a crash site, and it's what's great is like, so this entire mission is trying to get BT working because he's been damaged and shut down. And it's great because for me, you're looking for batteries essentially. Yep. To power him back up. And it's like the least remarkable chapter, but it's also like, it's trying to, the objective is like, it's going to make the gameplay more exciting.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. you're going to get rewarded by end of this by getting in the Titan,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I thought that was very successful. I have a note here that's kind of funny. I said, you have maybe the first sewer level that I've ever liked.
Yeah, that's true.
And I said, so why does this work, right? Why do we hate sewer levels, Greg? Why?
Why do we hate sewer levels?
Yeah.
Because what do you have? It's always either ugly, or there's poison, or there's some sort of environmental thing that we can't stand, or it's just a slog, right?
Yes. This one, by contrast, is very brightly lit. It's wide open, and it doesn't slow things down too mm-hmm. much. This is very much kind of, you have a lot of trading back and forth between BT and Cooper. And you have, it kind of showcases like, well, he's going to like wade through the big water or whatever. He's going to, you know, you get into a combat scenario, or, oh, I can't fit through this space. We're going to send Cooper through it, mm-hmm. or have to walk along the walls, etc. But, you know, like it's even a sewer level, they nailed, right? You mentioned the factory level. Brilliant. Absolutely right. Brilliant here. You have a lot of unique kind of platforming and shooting segments. As you work your way through sort of this, as you put it, prefab assembly line, where you have, I guess, a house or a neighborhood or something like that in varying states of production. So you're essentially, as you progress through the level, like you're finding like these houses that are a little bit more complete, mm-hmm. and it changes it every time that you get into an encounter. And sometimes they're not like normally like vertical or anything. They're like, you know, hanging upside down and stuff and all this stuff. And you wind up having to climb up that wall.
Right.
And it was just like, that was a very, very Mirror's Edge. And I thought that was incredible. I was like, that was the moment, I think, for me. It was like kind of portally too, a little bit almost.
Yeah, and I think that's the moment where I think I said, okay, they gave a shit about the level design.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like, so this is going to be a little more unique than I expected.
Yeah, maybe they're going to give you a little more than you thought.
And what makes it amazing is the battle at the end of this level is in the completed structure.
Yes.
And I was like, oh.
Yep, nice.
Awesome. So I want to, there's a very, notorious, I'd say, level, coming up next, which has been discussed. There's a great video, which I guess we'll link, of how they made it. It is a very Nintendo-y kind of, you speaking of Zelda, level where, you get to this, area that is all run down and you start experiencing these brief temporal flashes where you're going back in time. You're getting sucked back in time, back and forth. It's very random. And then you eventually find this character you've been looking for who is dead, and he is in multiple pieces. And you find this wrist device that lets you flick back and forward through time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, what's right. This is insane. I've never seen anything like this before.
Right.
I think it's incredible. So originally this was kind of an intriguing premise where you were going to, BT was going to die in the present, and then you were going to have to go back to the past to find him and like bring him back, I guess. It's kind of interesting, but it's a little simpler than that, where you are just kind of trying to piece together what happened to this facility, because sure. when you're in the past, everything is working. It's all beautiful. It's fully populated, scientists and soldiers everywhere. And then when you're in the future, it's all like animals, kind of running around and shit. It's very rainy. It's like a very, so basically you have, they're not really reusing assets because the eras are so disparate.
Sure.
And you, there's actually a pretty cool little Easter egg where if you interrupt a presentation going on in the past, if you find the audio log in the future, it will be interrupted at the point that you,
you interrupted very clever. It.
Pretty crazy. It was something else that I was thinking myself about that they address in interviews is that a lot of the geometry that they created for this is missable since you are so frequently flipping,
jumping back.
There's
and
a
forth.
Lot of like, you know, oh, I'm gonna fall into this fire. I gotta flip back into the future mm-hmm. or past or whatever. And you can theoretically miss like whole hallways because they're traversable either way. It was one of those like I recalled our conversation with Bill Gardner where it was a lot of symbiosis between, you know, the art team and the design team.
Sure,
where the level designer handing off kind of gamey geometry to the art department and hoping they can make it work.
Yeah.
And what I found out was that Respawn now uses this tactic to test new hires. Like, can you make, we have this geometry, we need it for this level. Can you make it look like a real thing?
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
I think that's a very, very interesting way to test someone's creativity. You also have like C4 that you can use in this, and it's I think that's awesome because you can like drop it in the past and flip back to the future and then trigger
and then
it, etc.
Yep.
Oh man, you can do a lot. And what I thought was pretty crazy about this was they said it was inspired by the Nightcrawler scene in X-Men 2. I don't know if you remember this at all, but there's a scene where this character is breaking into the White House and he can teleport. And every time he teleports, he disappears in a puff of blue smoke. Right. And so they're like, where is he? Where is he? And like, they're trying to track him down and stuff. And so basically that's what you're doing
to the enemies in this level because they're watching you blink in and out of existence.
Right, sure.
And it's like, so you're getting like this huge panic. And it winds up, you know, obviously you kind of realize that you are the one who caused this place to fall apart.
Right.
And you, so it ends ultimately with this device that you've been looking for exploding, and there's like a freeze frame, and it's all like, so you've been snapping back and forth the whole time, and it's all sort of converging here, and you have a platforming sequence along, I mean, this is really like, you really have to experience it for yourself, but you are, you know, it's in the middle of an explosion, and you have to like parkour along things that are flying through the air.
Yep.
And it was like, holy shit, this level is unbelievable.
It's like you guys thought you would get this from Titanfall 1 and the Call of Duty guys, right?
Absolutely right? Not. I mean, yeah. And it's crazy. I feel like a ton of people would love this, would eat this up.
Right,
you know?
Sure.
So a little less remarkable is the following level where you have to like call for help. You have to adjust like a relay, and this is a very parkour heavy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of good, like, fun, like, sniping opportunities. I'm like, oh, something different, you know. You have to move these, like, cranes so you can parkour around them.
Yep.
And it winds up, you use, like, the same kind of controls to get the, like, relay in alignment, stuff like that.
That's kind of what their section puzzle solving. Yeah. Their game philosophy.
Yes, but you also get, it's a very fun, funny sequence where you get this called the arc gun, I believe, and you have to like shock open doors with it, but you have to do this thing to power something up where you run into like it's almost like a Metal Gear like microwave situation where you have like 30 seconds to do this, and you have to shoot this little gun like a million times, and there's panels all over a room. I'm like, that's, I haven't seen that before.
Right.
That's kind of fun. So essentially you wind up like calling for help. This plot is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're on this planet. You're looking for this device that is going to be a game changer. It's a time travel device.
Sure.
And
you're looking for the Gears of War resonator. Right?
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't have much to say about the mission where you link up with your buddies, except that it fucking rules. This is the first time in the, so essentially you have had a couple engagements with BT where you're fighting enemy Titans here and there.
Is this the one where you have like friendly robots with you too?
Yes.
Friendly Titans.
And
yeah.
they're all dropping in at once.
Yeah.
And there's a ton of big Titans on your side and a ton on the enemy's side, and you're just charging at each other. I'm like, dude, you fucking nailed it.
This is literally the moment that I actually have a note written down here that it said, I think this is just the better version of Lost Planet. So that's kind of this, because they were trying to do that.
Yeah, because so many other developers would have had that sequence way earlier. It wouldn't have felt like an earned like climax. Yeah. It's really like, let's go.
Do you have any experience with Armored Core?
Not a ton. Because I
don't.
No, I've only seen a little bit of footage because of it's our guys.
Yeah. Miyazaki.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, maybe someday I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's the only crossover I can think
of. It's very popular.
Yeah, shitty Lost Planet and Armored Core. Yeah.
So I love that part. I thought that was awesome. And then you get an awesome, there's a lot of awesome and interesting in this episode. Apologies. a little bit of geeking out.
We're
here.
Just using a lot of Call of Duty words. Like,
yes.
Awesome.
Awesome. Sick.
Yeah.
There is a mid-air chase that I loved. That I was, this game is like just keeps topping itself.
Right? All in 4 hours.
Right. It's a very, very short. I played this originally on Game Pass.
Me too, I believe.
Hopefully it's still on there if you want to check it out. But a lot of great platforming here where it's almost like a, feels like a Smash map where you're racing along this landscape or on these ships, jumping from ship to ship. This is where that throw comes in, where he's like, I have to accommodate that we're moving at a million miles an hour or whatever. And a very kind of tense moment where you have like what's called the data knife. So your knife also has like a USB thing in it or whatever. And you stick it in the ship and you have to drive the ship and you have to like line it up. It's like, man, what am I doing here? Like, this is crazy.
And this was actually my favorite boss fight of the whole thing with the flying Titan that you have to fight.
Yeah.
He has a sniper rifle.
Yep, yep.
I was, because I found the bosses overall not as like up to par with the rest of the experience. Like just, it's just another
it's
Titan fight.
It's kind of hide behind wall shoot.
Right. Yeah. So this one stood out to me. Viper is the character. So this is, we're getting towards the end here, believe it or not, but there is... I have a handful of gripes about the last level. Overall, I think it is very successful. So you find this, the ARC device, as I mentioned. BT hides it in his cockpit, and you get captured mm-hmm. by the
mercenaries,
Apex people. Yeah. And he eventually are like, you got to open up, or you know, we're gonna kill Cooper, right? And I'm like, hey, you get kind of an interesting thing here, and he's like, trust me. And
you almost text your helmet.
Yes.
You remember that little moment?
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah.
It's almost, this is kind of an interesting moment. I was actually watching this cinematic today before we recorded this.
Yeah.
It's a weird little moment here. Like I said recently, I was reading into the Google Lambda sentient AI thing.
Yes.
And the big question I always have is like, can sentient AI lie or intentionally deceive?
Mm.
And I feel like BT does it in this scene where he says something like, a voice, essentially the mercenary guy's like, give me the arc, tell your robot or tell your Titan to open up.
Right.
And then the BT from the back goes, cannot understand voice command. Like, essentially he's saying, you're not Cooper, so I won't open. But I'm like, is he being cheeky? Like, he clearly knows when someone's asking him to do.
Yeah.
But then he texts your HUD, trust me.
Right.
Or like, or something like that. I'm like, this is like very clever and also cute.
Yeah.
Like, what's going to go on here?
No, and it's very much like a payoff of the trust you have for each other and all that stuff. And they essentially like kill him, air quotes. Right?
Yeah.
So
very sad.
You wind up taking out his core or whatever. And what I thought was, see, this final level is even has a memorable aspect where you are your gun that you have here. It's like a little emergency kit. It is guided by his AI. So the bullets auto target.
They auto headshot.
So even if you're not aiming at somebody.
It's like a really cool moment where essentially like BT deceives these villains into getting close to him so he can start ripping them to shreds.
Right.
But he eventually, quote unquote, dies.
Yeah.
But. With sort of his last, I guess I'll call it his last robot breath.
Yeah.
He said, please, he calls it like a SIR kit or something.
Yes.
So he essentially gives you his eye, which is an emergency kit.
Yeah.
And in it is a handgun with his targeting system. And I think it's one of those AI knives.
Yeah.
And then as you're essentially sprinting through the final level with a handgun, but it's with robot precision. So everything
like
is a headshot.
Automatic.
Unlimited
ammo.
It's a
very good way of like building momentum as you know, this is the end. Like, you know, you're the shit at this point.
Yeah.
And so what winds up happening is they drop a empty Titan in and you stick his AI core back
his,
in
like
it.
Thoughts and memories populate a different shell.
Yes. And so this is the last model of Titan you get. And it's the Legion one, the one that's super strong. And what winds up happening is like it has a big minigun and you climb up it. To get into, I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool.
This game like thought of everything, right? For a 4-hour fucking pump fest.
A big let's go moment.
Yeah,
you
it's
know?
Like 4 hours of let's go, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So my gripes here are that I feel like it kind of stumbles on the landing a little bit with once you get to the end, it doesn't feel like much of a victory.
Mm-hmm.
And you have another BT death like not that long after the first one.
Yeah.
And it is also maybe another fake out.
Yeah.
So you have two fake out deaths and I'm like, oh,
right.
So I mean that's really it. So like you succeed, you get the thing back, whatever, the MacGuffin.
Yeah,
whatever.
you get the resonator back.
Yes, exactly. And the last mercenary leaves you alone. And
it's actually kind of a weird scene. I was watching that cinematic today as
well.
That's
how I felt as well.
Where it's kind of a strange scene where he could kill you, but says, well, it's not in the contract to kill him, so I'm not going to.
Right.
So this was all spurred by money. This is interesting.
Yeah.
Or not interesting at all.
Yeah. So you have like a kind of meh ending for like an otherwise like pretty impeccable experience.
Yeah.
I guess my question to you is, what would you have done differently in this moment?
I thought when BT essentially sacrifices himself to rip apart those dudes and give you the, is it called the circuit? I don't remember. I think it's S-C-R-R-E. I don't remember.
Okay.
I thought he should have been done. Like, he's given you essentially that he's given you his brain and his gun. Now get out of here.
Right.
When you kind of get, you almost get a cutesy moment where you put his thoughts and memories into a new Titan.
Yeah.
I would have almost rather it, not that it, maybe rather it end there, right?
Yeah.
Where he's given you his sort of his final weapon to get out of here.
Yeah.
That would be the emotional ending, right? Rather mm-hmm. than a bunch of double fakes where he's back and he's back.
Yeah.
I know that's maybe, I would have almost gone for the ironic ending personally, right? By ironic, I mean, okay, he helped you in a cinematic, here's gun, run down hallway, game's over, right? I don't know how you feel.
Yeah, so either that or you give it to a new robot and that's it. Like, one or the other.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
Instead of, and I feel like they could have done a better job of making you hate that villain a little bit
more. It was very blah. I feel like they put a lot of effort into BT and Cooper are buddies and they learn about each other, not really this other stuff.
Yeah.
People are being paid money for the resonator, whatever. Right?
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
Blah, whatever. Yep. So that's it for the story. I had a couple closing comments
here.
Respawn's innovation fortunately carries over to the recent Star Wars game, as we have covered. Please listen to that episode. Very proud of that episode. Play that game.
Yeah.
Jedi Fallen Order.
That's right.
A new one is a trailer just dropped for the sequel, whenever
yep.
that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to mention this because it was a complete surprise to me. Titanfall is...
Wait, before you say it, I have a note written down here. I wonder if it's the same. Go ahead.
It's probably the same thing, but Titanfall is... This was the last one. I don't believe they have... You know, the disappointing commercial launch seems to have halted any imminent plans for a Titanfall 3, but for me, maybe this is for the best. You created an absolute banger of a game that will stand the test of time. I feel like the further you go with the series, the harder it is to maintain that same level of
yeah.
imagination. But why don't you just say yours and I'll tell you if it's the
same
thing.
My note is Apex Legends.
Yes.
And Apex Legends and Titanfall are the same universe,
yes.
question mark?
So that was when I was replaying this game for the first time in years and I was like, What is this? Apex Predators. And then I was reading
and
the wiki.
The mercenary drops an Apex card on your windshield.
Yes.
And it says Apex. I'm like, oh, really?
But I didn't make the connection until I was reading the wiki. And I was like, and it's like, this character is one of the Apex Legends. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. So essentially Titanfall has continued, but it was lost on me.
Yes. So I haven't played that game at all.
Me either. I mean, there are no Titans in it.
There's no Titans in it. From what I understand, I didn't actually remember that some of the characters are AI. Some of the enemy pilots are robots, like
mm-hmm.
you know, sentient robots. And that is a battle royale game, right?
I think something.
I should have researched this, but I just thought it was a weird, because I think the big joke is that there's a lot of commercials for it. Like, this was sponsored by Apex Legends and everything.
Right.
I always just kind of dismiss it as, oh, it's one of those games.
I had
no idea it was connected to this
game
that I think very highly of.
I just think in the 4 years it's been since I played this game thoroughly, all this kind of multiplayer stuff has blown up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So... I think this game is pretty incredible. I have a lot of kind words for it. Last sort of interesting prompt, as I was like, I don't know if I would have wanted even a Titanfall 3. What do you think?
It's so hard, where it's one of these things where Titanfall 1, I tend to kind of, I don't know what the right word is, sort of flick my nose at multiplayer only kind of games.
Yeah.
Titanfall 2, it's a 4-hour story with multiplayer that also didn't go anywhere. It didn't sell well. I'm always curious, like, if now that you've built the fan base and sort of the internet has sort of held up Titanfall 2 as this underrated gem of a story.
Yeah.
I wonder if they went back to it and they had all the support and all the budget, if they could really bang out a 10 out of 10.
Maybe in a couple of years.
You know what I mean? Where, like, I feel like it's been long enough now where I could kill for another one.
Sure.
I feel like we're almost seeing another circle where Battle Royale is getting oversaturated. I'm looking for something different.
People are beginning to appreciate the single player.
Well, I guess what I mean is like also this game is consistently held up by the internet as way better than you would think. The single player specifically.
Oh yeah.
I wonder like what they could do with it as a full-fledged budgeted release.
I know.
I don't know. Hard to say.
I mean, that's kind of why I picked it up in the first place was word of mouth.
Yeah.
So now you're kind of seeing that. I don't know. As long as you kind of continue to innovate and had things that I've never seen before, like that time travel level is like unbelievable.
Hey man, like I feel like what I kind of learned from Titanfall is like these game developers and directors and writers, even though, okay, they made Call of Duty, that doesn't mean these guys are not creative, that they don't have these, you know, these awesome sort of things you would not expect in terms of level design and parkour and time traveling. Yeah. These are all very talented dudes who made a very interesting game. Mm-hmm. And I think it would the stigma that they make Call of Duty, even though they made the good ones,
yeah.
I thought you were just going to get a fucking stupid pump fest.
And it's
not that at all.
Well,
which
yeah,
is very interesting.
That was what held me back from playing it.
Of course,
the
me too.
The first one I released, etc. Yeah. But, you know, don't judge a book by its cover, yeah. I guess.
Don't judge a book by its prequels, I guess. I don't know. I'm
yeah,
not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. But ultimately, do you want to get into some grades here? What would you give
yeah,
this
Yeah, I think
game?
We can wrap this up. I think this is a big recording session day for 8 out of 10s.
It's an 8 for you?
Yeah, I think it's an 8 out of 10 day at goddamn GameCube Studios.
I think I might agree with you.
This is a B, I think.
I think if I was a little more sucked into the villains and that kind of aspect of the story, it would have been a little higher.
I think you can't. I don't think you can give this game an A because it is incredibly brief, and they also don't land the ending. And like the multiplayer is kind of dead at this point. It never really got off the ground.
It's the multiplayer is definitely more successful than the first one was.
I think
people are still playing it. But it is, it didn't really blow up. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I'm going with an 8.
I think this is a B, and, that is it for this episode of Goddamn GameCube, and we will catch you guys next time. Thanks.